to the next episode of Joe and Gord's Ascension podcast. I'm totally kidding. We still don't have a name for this yet, but with me in my office is my American Bulldog Gord. With me virtually is Brent White and Tim Roberts. They are covert entry specialists with Dark Wolf. They also run wehackpeople.com. And I know the two of them from the OSINT world, the social engineering world, and the conference circuit. So welcome, gentlemen.
And Brent.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. I hope everyone's having a good day so far. I'm pretty excited. I do want to preface this for the people on Twitch and other platforms. If the audio does not line up as it did with the last episode, the replay of this will be released audio only so that you're not having to be... I've already forgot the word. So that you are not... I was distracted. So you would not be distracted by the discrepancy within audio and video. So we'll go ahead and kick in. I'm going to be watching the Twitch chat and Discord for any questions that may come up and how we go down that rabbit hole. But first and foremost, I guess we'll start with Tim. What's on your mind today, Tim?
What's on my mind? finishing report writing. That was that's been on my mind most of the week. I think Brent and I did a on-site assessment not too long ago, so kind of heads down in that for most of my other work day, long work days.
Report writing is
that your is that your cat? You look like Dr. Evil with your cat in your lap there, Tim.
Yeah, she wouldn't be quiet until I picked her up, so I put her in my lap.
Nice.
So Brent, you've got a which pet are you bringing into your office? I know you've got some chickens.
Yeah, no chickens in the office today. I don't feel like scooping up all that crap. So no animals in the office today. I try to keep them outside. So
just you as the animal, right?
Yep, I'm the animal in here today.
That makes sense. Actually, with what you said, Tim, that's actually a good segue into starting out on something that I know a lot of people who tune in and watch the channel, listen and everything, something they're interested in. And it's not really a spoiler, but you know, I'm about to release an introduction to intelligence report writing. So I'm going to pass to you and Brent to talk about your perspective of the importance of intelligence report writing, because at the end of the day, let's face it, social engineering is intelligence. It's usually derived after some OSINT. And if we wanted to put another name on it, honestly, social engineering in many cases is really human intelligence.
Yeah.
So, and then of course, you've got some of the more technical stealthy things that you're doing with covert entry, but it still kind of falls under the realm of social engineering. So what are some of the things that you consider to be important with intelligence report writing? And what are some tips that you may have for those tuning in?
One of the things that I think we've started doing actually is asking the client if they want video, because that helps. Because if we miss a photo or something, because a lot of our clients will do one of two things. So they'll either have designated things that we take, but we're and we try to get out of the building, or you know, it's a pretty broad scope where we're focused on you know, things laying around, plugging in malicious devices, getting into server rooms, getting into offices and all that. So taking evidence, I think is important. You know, whether that's pulling from a video or taking a lot of photos, I've found that that is important. And secondly, take note of commendable practices. That's something that Brent and I, we kind of have a repository of findings and commendable practices that we've noted over the years. And I think people sometimes forget. They're quick to call out the vulnerabilities and the bad things that people are doing. But, you know, if you get caught, you know, call out that security awareness, or if someone questions it, call it out, you know. So that's kind of my input on report writing. Also, don't make it a table Bible. Don't make it, you know, a 100-page report. That's like giving a vulnerability scan. You know, the bigger it is, the less they're going to digest it, I think. So just keep it straight to the point. You don't have to clutter it with tons of photos, but sufficient evidence.
Yeah. To sort of add on to that too, as Tim was just mentioning, as with any like intel report writing, you want it to be precise. You want to get to the point. So it's something that you put 20 words. Why put 20 when you can say the exact same thing in 10 words and get to the point? So just make sure that it's all in the standard intel report writing, right? So say what you need to say. Make sure that if the evidence you gather to get to a certain point or a certain conclusion, as Tim mentioned, make sure that that evidence is clear. So when the customer or the client looks over that report, there's no guesswork on the air end as far as how we reach point A to point B. Something else that we do too, and this is more specific to the covert entry side of things, you know, social engineering, where this might be different from a standard intel report, is if we are able to social engineer an individual person or find a specific thing that they did wrong that we were able to leverage, we make it a point to not put their name in there. We do go to them when we can after the fact and sort of educate them on what we found, but we are pretty big against putting specific individuals' names in reports, because if we can have that teaching moment with them, that's better than them getting fired and then the next person coming in not having that experience. Obviously, that's going to be different if you're doing a report against a specific individual, but in this case, if it's for a company or any sort of a entity, then we highly recommend against not putting specific individuals in their faults.
Yeah, totally agree.
I like that as well, because when you talk about having a report and having, say, someone in it, you can say someone within accounting had an issue. Someone with accounting allowed this. But going a little bit further, because, you know, while I do the attack side, I've done the attack side, and I've also done the defensive side. The biggest thing I want out of my users is reporting. And not so much on exactly what you're doing with your covert entry, but somewhat on the side of phishing. I want people to report when they have clicked on something. And if someone gets fired for clicking on something that leads to ransomware, the next person that clicks on something is going to be afraid to report having clicked it for fear of being fired. So not giving up the specifics, unless it's with an individual, which is another practice that I will do, like with an OSINT report, if someone says, hey, we want you to find everything you can about me, okay, cool, I'll tell you, the person, every password I find. I'm not going to tell your employer yours, Tim's, and everyone else's passwords I find, because there's no assurance that it won't be misused. But I really like the way that you present it in such a way that prevents it from being punitive in nature.
Yeah, we've had an instance. Well, Tim, sorry, I think, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I think I just interrupted. It's probably the same thoughts. No, go ahead, complete it.
How about how we have seen people fired basically on the spot with things? It's horrible. It's not what we're there to do. We're there to help strengthen. So, that was a big kind of an eye opener for us at that point. We're like, we are never mentioning people again. So,
and I think that's the same with a lot of technical reports are just like application pen test or cloud pen testing, network, whatever. Nobody likes to see when stuff gets called out or see their stuff get exploited, whether it's on a physical or social or technical vector. I think they find someone to blame you know, and in this industry, I think all of us know that the CISO is often, you know, their head on the block when someone fails. And I don't think it should ever be looked at as failure. And I think as professionals, we need to encourage our clients that, you know, we're here to help. And that includes the technical people, because they're the ones that, you know, whose heads are on the line oftentimes, the network engineers, the developers, the building manager, the maintenance, you know, or the receptionist even.
Absolutely. And to take what other people in the social engineering world have said, at the end of the day, the three of us are pretty much professional con artists. We are always trying to find a technique to be able to get in. And we may be more or less persistent than an actual adversary. So if someone falls victim to something that we're up to, that just makes them human, because we're sitting around scheming these ideas. For anyone who's ever been to Layer 8 conference, I don't know if either of you have been to it, but literally, if you go to the speaker's dinner, it's nothing but a who's who of social engineers sharing war stories, scheming up new ideas together. That's all it is. And for a layperson to fall for that, that just proves that they're human. And at the end of the day, that's what we're testing. And philosophically, I always like to put it in the lens of we're testing the people, but the idea that people are the greatest weakness, that kind of bothers me a little bit when I hear that. People are a weakness, but at the same time, the three of us also have technical enough chops to understand that there's one or more people, up to a whole team of people, that should be building their defenses for these scenarios when something goes wrong, when something gets plugged in, a Hack 5 product gets plugged in, or we get access to a certain part of the building, or we have a successful phishing engagement that has something attached to it. We should be testing the people and conditioning the people. But at the end of the day, the biggest weakness, I think, would honestly be arrogant security teams that want to pass the accountability for the finding to the people.
I do think that that's the case. And I think, you know, and people, as we know, are often the first line of defense and the weakest line of defense. And, you know, and not having a robust security awareness program or training, you know, I think we're in the corporate or the commercial world, even government, there's a checkbox that you have to meet. And I think people, when they focus on their security awareness, they put together this slide thing. You go to a website, you take the quiz, and then now you're good to go for the rest of the year. And it's not an instilled culture. And I really, you know, as technical as we want to get while doing the covert entry stuff or not, you know, you could spend $500 on an iCopyX, or, you know, a few grand now on a Boss cloner if you could find one. But in the end, it's the tailgating, it's the latch slipping, it's the putting multiple hats on your maintenance crew to as if they're physical security professionals, and them installing these things with poor controls. But yeah, I think there's a lackadaisical thing, especially when people buy what I find funny, and I'll ramble, but is when people spend thousands of dollars on these electronic access control systems, and then they get bypassed with something simple, or someone's holding the door open all the time. On this on-site we did pretty recently, somebody held a door open for another person, or I was leaving, and I didn't hold the door open for them, and they seemed insulted. So, you know, as a culture, I think we could probably dive into that too, but especially as an American.
100%, and not to cut you off there, Brent, but this brings up memories for me, because I vape, right? And I smoked for 15 years. When I travel outside the US, I smoke cigarettes. But if you can hang out in the smoking area, you can easily build a rapport with people fairly quickly to be able to gain access and learn a lot about the lay of the land. But some of the most successful things I've seen in terms of gaining entry, obviously the whole, if you show up with a clipboard, you look authoritative, so people let you in. Donuts,
coffee.
Yeah, same thing with coffee. I mean, if you roll up with a dozen donuts, especially like some piping hot, fresh Krispy Kreme, or depending on where you are in the country, Dunkin' may be the better choice. Know your audience. But if you show up and if they can get that smell, people will put their cigarettes out early to let you in and hope that you're going to give them a donut.
Yeah. So that is a great point. And it's actually every single time we've had an assessment where there has been a smoke area, whether we had other points of entry or not, we always make it a point to utilize that at least once or twice to prove the point, right? So kind of going back to, wrote a couple things down here. You said that we're basically professional con artists. You're right. I mean, we have a lot of time. It's our jobs to sit around and not only think of entry points, but actually practicing these, I guess, psychological attacks, if that's what you want to call it, against people based off their personality, mixed in with the environment that they're in. All of these different things, we are aware of those and how to use those in that moment against that person. Now, I will say, I also agree about not really liking the statement of people being the weakest link. Do we have flaws? Absolutely. Well, so does technology. However, I am a pretty firm believer in, and it's probably going to sound odd saying this, but as much as we bypass access control systems, these tech systems, the doors, as much as we bypass that, if those things are installed properly by the right people, such as a secure door, something that, as Tim mentioned, you can't slip a latch or weaken a mag lock or pull the hinge pins out by hand, which we actually did on this. Well, Tim did that on our last assessment, pulled it out by hand because they were so loose. Mixed with things, so tailgating, I've seen several different technologies in various areas, whether it is public places or even more secure places, skiffs, things like that. There are different technologies for man traps that when they are installed properly and you have people who are watching correctly with security awareness training, and outside of those man traps, you have doors that are installed properly with the correct alarm systems, you know, motion sensors placed in correct areas. All of these things, I believe that even with our flaws, our ability as people to be socially engineered, when you add that tech in there too, it should bring things up to a different level that sort of accounts for our weaknesses as humans. So there's a lot of good tech out there, but what we see most of the time is that tech, the money's been spent on it, but it's not installed properly. So it doesn't even matter.
Installed by the lowest bidder.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the thing too, is people depend on that. And when they don't depend on it, then that's the issue, is or when they can't depend on it, rather. Absolutely. I think locksmiths and stuff, or just people installing alarm systems, it's a concern. Even like contractors, you see this too, like with like cleaning crews. We all know, you know, that's always a good guy, especially if there's after hours cleaning. People oftentimes are too kind though. But the tech, when it fails, then you have to depend on your people. They're a firewall, you know, you gotta depend on them.
To that point, I don't know if you'll have any insight into this or not, but have you done any engagements, notably against organizations that put a heavy reliance on like the ACES certifications, like physical security professional or certified protection professional at all?
For their staff?
For the physical security staff, security guards, or monitoring staff.
Yeah, I've seen that. As is, I think a lot of them call. But yeah, no, I've seen that as a standard, or at least a training, and there's a lot of communities too, that I think even being a part of. So even if it's not in your budget to hire, if you have to have the maintenance person install these devices, have them educate themselves, pay to educate them. That's what I would say about that.
Yeah, with Asus, I see them and their marketing materials being kind of like, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but kind of like their certifications being marketed as the CISSP of investigations and security, like physical security. So I was just curious as to whether you'd crossed paths with a lot of them and whether they kind of lived up to the CISSP on paper, but not an implementation type mentality.
Oh, absolutely. And Brent can attest to this. I am a firm believer that certifications are not an indication of your capabilities, or, you know, anybody can cram for a certification and pass it. But as soon as you're done cramming, it's out the ear, you know, a year or two later, unless you're using it all the time. But even then, I don't like the alphabet soup, whether it's relying on one cert, you know, oh, you have your OSCP, let's bring you in as a pen tester. Oh, you have a CISSP, let's make you CISO of, and I've seen this. Somebody got their CISSP, formerly they had 20 years of project management experience, and they became CISO of the state. And they didn't know what they were doing. And I hate to say that, but they depended heavily on security administrators. And that shouldn't be the case.
I don't disagree. Admittedly, I got all of my certifications except for maybe one or two because I was working with the federal government. So being a contractor, I knew there was a massive pay bump for me getting CISSP and then pulling off and doing the ISSMP. But, you know, just like CISSP, to bring this back to the ASUS physical world, there's the right way, the wrong way, and the CISSP way. There's the right way, the wrong way, and the ASUS way. Yep. So whatever you have to do, pass the test.
Yeah, not to totally, you know, throw those things under the bus. The training material, CISSP, ASUS, I've seen a lot of those. It's good material. It's good to learn the options of technology out there, how to use them, how they should be implemented. Those things are good. But as Tim mentioned, just knowing that and having that doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that you're necessarily qualified. And if you have those things and you also have hands-on experience, sure, that's great. Yeah. But just from the certs alone, OSCP, great cert, very challenging, but I've actually worked with a couple of pen testers that came in with that, but they didn't know how to properly conduct an assessment on a full-scale network and other things. They learned it, but that, you know, again, hands-on experience.
And just to add on to that real quick, I think that, like, on the other side, the flip side of that, you miss out on some quality talent from people who don't have certifications. And that's unfortunate, because I see that way too often. You have to have this certification to do this. Yeah, the DOD requires, you know, certs. The government requires different certs. And that's a baseline. I understand if there's a baseline, you need your security plus or whatever to meet it. You know, I totally understand that. But to depend entirely on that and be the de facto, it's too dynamic of a field, I think, especially when it comes to people and access controls. It's too dynamic of the world sometimes to try to standardize certifications.
Can you tell that we've talked a lot about this, Joe? We've sort of ranted to each other about this several times.
I want to think that we've had this conversation in person as well. This sounds like something that we had early in the evening at something like NOLACON before we hit bourbon, or maybe after we hit bourbon and we were really had the truth serum going. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to parrot exactly what I said in the last stream with Ray Bango. You know who doesn't have all of these certifications? Criminal. The adversaries.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, you hit it on the head. I love that. I'm going to steal that from you, Joe. We're going to put that in our slide deck.
I'll give you another one too. And this one's more along social engineering. So I had a spirited discussion with someone, another social engineer, that basically said that they would target someone's personal social media, their personal email, their personal phone accounts. I objected to this. Before I provide my rationale, what are your thoughts on that?
Just to clarify, is it for, it's an assessment against a company?
It's trying to gain access to a company.
Okay, so I am completely against that. If it's for the company, you go after that. If they have assets within the company, work email, work phone, sure. But if it's a personal device, that's a whole other level. Now you're starting to look at potential lawsuits. You've got access into things that you are not covered under with rules of engagement between that client. I think same thing with personal emails. I'm completely against that.
Yeah. And admittedly, I have, you know, I make fake Facebook accounts, like burner accounts, and try to engage on the page of the company, whether that's LinkedIn or Facebook or something. But yeah, no, I agree. I think going after people, it's like, for example, finding a personal device that's left on a desk or in an office, and you think it's part of the engagement. So you boot up a bootable USB and you discover, hey, this is a personal laptop. It's not encrypted. It's got other stuff. You cease. You stop. The same thing for a network test. You find someone's Gmail account. You don't go and test to see if their Gmail account password is the same as the one you compromised. Like that's going, I think, outside of, like Brent mentioned, the rules of engagement and the scope of trust.
And that's my exact thought as well. The only yeah. caveat that I would provide to that is we have a lot more of the workforce being remote only. Companies are no longer issuing phones as often as they used to. So that makes vishing a little bit trickier. But companies, I have seen some companies issuing VoIP numbers, like with Grasshopper and other things. I would say that phone number would be fully admissible. The only way that I would be comfortable attempting to fish, smish, vish, anything, someone's own devices, would be if the company had a verbose BYOD policy and the person had given explicit consent. And even then, I wouldn't be trying to log into their Facebook. I wouldn't be trying to log into their Gmail. OSINT on their Facebook and Gmail, that's a whole new ballgame. I'll exactly. do that all day, every day. But trying to log in, and here's the part you can use in your slide deck. But the adversaries do that. I mean, the adversaries, they gained access to a personal device and pivoted in one of those most recent data breaches, right? That's mm-hmm. what just came out recently.
Yep.
But when is the last time either of you have seen a network pen test scoped to allow for legit ransomware, not in a test environment, like full-on ransomware or a DDoS?
Never. That stuff's always off the table.
Adversaries do it too. Yeah. Well, on the physical realm too, I think sometimes Brent and I have seen windows to server rooms. Server rooms with windows. Are we going to break the window? No. But we do note that in the report. And I think it's important to note, you know, so-and-so is using their account on whatever that Ashley site was years ago, you know. I think it's important to note that stuff when you find stuff on Dhashed or whatever, because they may be, a lot of people use the same password, unfortunately, and on a network level.
And that's exactly why, like, if I submit a report to a company, I will say the following people need to change their passwords, or you should not allow these passwords for anyone. I will yep. not put two and two together. if someone wants to go do that extra effort to find out what, which person's using which password, they're going to do that malicious stuff either way. As soon as they read the report and see that I use dhash, they're going to log in and look anyway.
And one, a good point too, I think putting in the back to report writing, putting in passwords, like the complete passwords, I don't encourage, because you never know who's going to get eyes on that report and how long it's going to take them to remediate anything. So, you know, make sure that you obfuscate at least a portion of the password. But yeah,
I just provide the hashes for that matter.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, from the chat really quickly, the real B and E, A to Z, I'm assuming breaking and entering. It's great that you point out what goes well. When caught, do you get a chance to ask them why they decided to do the right thing to catch you? Is it really training, the culture, or X that drives them to do the right thing?
Yeah, I can kick this one off real quick, Tim. I just have a short answer on that. So the few times that people have came over to us and approached us, we've been pretty successful with sort of getting them to write it off. The two times that I personally have been stopped, one, the security guard was alerted by the client as I was going to the site, because I was successful at their first building. So that one, he was pretty upfront after talking after a couple of minutes and straight up told me, point of contact, called him and notified him I was on the way, because they didn't want to be embarrassed, I assume. The second time that I was caught and I wasn't able to work my way out, and I finally was like, okay, here's what I'm doing. The only answer really that the person gave me as to why was really because it was kind of bad timing on my part. They were bored. They didn't really know, like they didn't really notice me, and they just wanted to come talk to me because they didn't have anything else to do. I mean, that's really it. So.
Yeah. I'll add to that. I've been caught once, and the rest of the time I cheat because I have a fake letter of authorization with like that Bruce Wayne is the point of contact. And then, you know, our manager or like one of our directors or somebody has the phone number just to see if their incident response is to test their incident response even. And most, I would say 90% of the time, well, I guess 99 since, yeah, maybe, I don't know. But a lot of the time, people will glance over it and then they give it back and they don't do their due diligence and follow through with the incident response or incident reporting procedure. And I think that should be hand in hand with security awareness training too. But the time that I was caught, it was not a good time. So me and another guy, I had just built the covert clipboard. It was an RFID reading. It had an Arduino in it with some sensors in it. Basically a Proxmark from the guts. And I used it to badge in. The guy noticed and, you know, told someone else. They didn't recognize our face. You know, it was a low turnover place. So everybody pretty much knew everybody. And the security guard caught me. But when he escalated it to the guy that was over them, their security, physical security director, the guy was a complete jerk. He wanted to fight me. He got so insulted because they didn't let him know what was going on, which I feel like they should have. But then again, you know, a lot of the times they don't want to lose or they feel like they're failing. I don't want to fail. So like Brent said, they put other people on red alert, but I didn't have a chance to ask them, you know, hey, what set you off? But I can assume it was because we were badging in with a clipboard. And at the time we didn't have the tech to just clone the badge on the spot.
That makes sense.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. And since then I haven't been caught. So knock on wood.
There you go.
Except for fake letter of authorization, which goes to social engineering. So
I never thought of the fake letter of authorization. I do like that idea.
Yeah, we usually put the White House address on there and come up with some fake company like Gone Fishing.
I will say to anybody listening that hasn't used a fake letter before and considering it, as Tim mentioned, it is cool and it does work. However, you can't just like anybody go around with the fake letter. You really have to be confident in being able to read the situation. If that person is very adamant on, hey, you don't belong here, you're coming with me, you have to be aware enough to say, okay, here's the real thing. I'm not going to show you this fake one. Because what happens is if you're not experienced or whatever you want to call it, and some person comes up and they're very intent on finding out your purpose, and you pull out a fake letter and they pay attention to that. Now, if you start pulling out another letter, they're going to be like, no, like, screw this. You're messing with me. And now what could have been, hey, here's my letter, I'm here doing an assessment, is probably, or could very likely be escalated to a situation where I just showed you a fake letter. Now I really want to give you the real letter. And they're like, no, I'm not looking at another stupid letter. And now you've got this escalated situation where you might not even have a chance until things cool off later, which potential, you know, authorities showing up or whatever to say, here's the real deal. Now that you've cooled off, will you please look at this? I know that's like opposite end of the spectrum, kind of like worst case scenario, but it is something to consider before you start using a fake letter, which again, fake letter is great for incident response, but you really need to understand the situation before you try to pull it off.
And I would encourage whoever catches you, if you pull out the fake letter, encourage them to, and they don't believe you, encourage them to call from their global directory, not call the number on your new letter, on your real letter. Pull up the phone numbers from your point of contact so you know it's legitimate. That's always always a good tip. I can't remember who told me that, but yeah.
That one makes a lot of sense because honestly, I'm getting heavy coal fire and Iowa court system vibes off of that line of conversation, just because someone had authorized it and you had a sheriff that was not taking that as an answer. Yep. And I mean, you're going to run into those scenarios. When you're scoping your tests, do you ever do physical engagements on places with armed guards?
I can answer that after Brent. I think Brent had a thought here.
Yeah. So, we do. However, something that we have changed as of years ago is if there are armed guards, we will not do after hours or nighttime entry. If there are armed guards, we keep it to daytime and we make sure things are very specific on our letter, and then other things too, which I think Tim's probably about to say. So,
well, don't use a fake letter of authorization when there's armed guards. I don't encourage that. There's too many trigger happy security guards out there waiting for an opportunity. Oh, there's espionage going on, and then they feel like they're stopping somebody. You know, you don't want that to happen. You know, military bases and stuff like that is a completely different ballpark, and I think you have to really consider that, and you can't be as persistent, you know, I think, or tenacious. I think sometimes when, you know, the times we're able to talk our way out of it, we haven't had to exert too much tenacity, but there are times I've heard of other social engineers and security professionals who get angry, or they start yelling, or they raise their voice, and now they've not only, you know, their suspicions are already high. Now you're trying to intimidate them. Yeah, being angry in a rush or something works, but it you get more honey with what is it? You attract more bees with honey. You know, be kind.
Oh yeah.
And people will tend to try to, you know, connect with you. And I always like telling this story. I'm not going to go too far into it, but telling a security guard, you know, hey, yeah, these cameras, we're trying to upgrade your systems. And then they're saying, oh yeah, this sucks. And they're exposing because you've established a rapport, you've settled their nerves. And that's, you know, that's where the exploit resides. That's the delivery method.
Yeah. So something, it's a little secret sauce here too, for people listening, is I know there's usually a lot of talk about, you know, your guys, like, you know, walking in as, I don't know, let's use the super old example of, oh, I'm here to repair the printers, you know, something generic like that. There are many times where you don't even have to get into that. You just go in and you just strike up casual conversation. If there was, well, I'm wearing my Titans shirt. If there was a football game or something, let's say it was after the Super Bowl, you just go in and just be cool, you know, like just be buddy buddy. Like you've known this person for years. There, most people be like, oh, this guy's cool. And then you just have that conversation, and after a few minutes you're like, all right, well, I better get to it, I'm gonna be late. And you're like, all right, cool. And they never even asked you like, who are, like, what are you here to do? So that's something that works really well.
I tend to agree. And on the topic of armed guards, I'll share a quick story. Back when I was doing a lot of testing, when I worked as a consultant, we were not supposed to do testing at any place that had armed guards. The thought is, I mean, Joe can talk his way in and out of a lot of trouble. I can't really negotiate the idea, like, it's hard to reason and negotiate with a metallic mechanical assembly that's going to lob projectiles at me at a high rate of velocity.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
Move faster, Joe.
I know. I'll get into that in a second. Because I did a little bit of OSINT before this episode. But with that, I did an engagement against someone. I was able to get into their inventory area. I was able to get about $26,000 of goods, stuff it in my back pocket. And I had 1 foot out the door, and then I hear the cock of a gun and freeze. And I look up, and there's 3 handguns pointed in my face. And what I did is, my security of point of contact there, he was about 6'5". He wore flip-flops and shorts year-round. Everybody knew him. He was trailing me about 6 to 10 feet behind me. So he rounded the corner. He saw it. He was actually the one with the letter. So he whipped out the letter, got everything calmed down. I took the rest of the day off. And then I waited until the salesperson that sold that engagement was within earshot of the owner of the company when I verbally accosted him for it in the break room.
Yeah.
Long story short, though, he didn't get fired. He got promoted.
Wow. Promoted out of there. We definitely don't encourage that. And also, we don't encourage trying to run away either. You could be a parkour guy, and it's, you still don't want to be, you know, jumping out windows and shit.
Yeah. Well, to that end as well, I mean, even if I had the letter in my back pocket, if I went to reach for it, what are they going to, like, that right there, you've just incited there.
Yep.
The ability.
Yeah, for, yeah, you got to tell them, hey, get this out of my pocket, please.
Yeah, exactly. But another funny story, it's a little bit closer geographically to the two of you. I was doing an engagement. It wasn't like a true physical test. It wasn't a true social engineering test. It was somewhere in between. I just would walk into various departments of the company. In this case, it was accounting. I walked in and I would just start opening drawers and start looking through files to try to get someone to challenge me. I was trying to get caught. Mm-hmm. And my security point of contact there also trailed me. And basically what had happened was, she picked up her purse and was about to swing it at me.
Oh, wow.
And here's what I had learned. She had been put on a performance improvement plan 6 weeks prior, because she had been concealed carrying in the office and her gun fell out, and they prohibited her from carrying a gun. But she was a high performing person in accounting. She knew somebody, she probably had some dirt on somebody. And ultimately the compromise they would have with her is, she could keep a purse with a giant brick under her desk to swing at people.
Wow.
I almost ate a brick, but
wow.
Yeah. Honestly, I think I might've been, I think I would have probably rather have been shot than hit in the face with a brick.
Yeah.
We should patent covert entry helmets, Tim.
Right. We had people.com helmets.
Yeah. to that end, through some of my OSINT wizardry or lack thereof, Tim, it looks like you do some martial arts. What kind?
Yeah. Well, I've been doing martial arts for 30 years, so it's a colorful background, but my primary one's capoeira. So I'm a professor in capoeira, and then I'm a master in hapkido. But I also teach law enforcement combatives and taught at some MMA gyms too, where they replace their kickboxing classes with capoeira. And then I also run a stunt show, which you probably found, called Ulfa the Vikings. So we do a lot of sword climbing and jousting. And yeah, it's a fun time.
You also throw flaming knives.
Oh, yeah. I also throw knives for the circus. So.
That's cool. I personally practice Brazilian jiu-jitsu and judo.
Oh, right on. Yeah,
I would love to do capoeira. They have capoeira in my area, but the schedule just doesn't mesh. So can't really do it. It'd be really cool because as a teenager, I love to watch that Only the Strong movie.
Absolutely. That's what got me into it. That and Tekken.
Tekken. If I recall correctly, Virtua Fighter also had a capoeira fighter or player in there as well, if I recall correctly. There's either Virtua Fighter or Street Fighter. It was one of those games. I wasn't a big Tekken person, so it was one of the other two, but yeah.
I think it was Street Fighter, wasn't it?
That had Blanca, but he didn't. He just was a big green electric guy.
But yeah. So be on the lookout for something associated with InfoSec and combat sports in the near future. I'm cooking something up with someone that we are going to drop it at insert conferences here. So, but I'll keep that on vague book. We've got about 12 minutes to go. So I'm going to turn it over to you all and, you know, share whatever wisdom you have, ask whatever questions you might want to ask my way. I'm not seeing anything in the chats. So, you know, we can freestyle it for a little bit as well, just to make sure that we're cognizant of your time.
Well, I would like to do some shameless pitching here. So Brent and I are working on a book called Hacker War Stories. And so we're hoping to release volume one pretty soon. I don't know if it'll be this year. It might be early next year, but collecting, you know, our own war stories and some of our favorite assessments that we kind of put in this story form. And so be on the lookout for that. That's something we've been working on for a while.
Oh yeah.
Are you planning on self-publishing that or going through a publisher?
Still trying to figure that part out, I think.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you offline about that.
Yeah, sounds great.
I have a little bit of experience with the book thing, so I can tell you of some of the pitfalls you might run into and things along those lines.
Earlier to your planning heists and stuff, we actually have a new t-shirt that was designed, and it's white and in very light print. It says across the chest, "Professional Liar." And then on the back, it has the We Hack People stuff. It's pretty cool. I'm totally still waiting on mine to get here. So
I'm going to have to score one of those.
Well, especially wearing that after you've done the covert stuff and you want to, you know, walk around and prove points or whatever, putting a shirt that says it.
Right. You wear that shirt with the Black Hills anti-siphon hacker one where it's all spelled backwards like an ambulance.
Oh yeah.
That's cool. We also have the one that we like to wear that in bold letters, it says, "I'm not supposed to be here."
Yeah.
So you can get that one too. So that's a fun one to wear after you've been there for a bit. And of course, you know, no one reads it. So it's even more funny.
Well, you're bringing up a very interesting point. I have to ask this. Do you have like a wardrobe department? Like, do you all ever go to like Goodwill or your local thrift yes. stores and try to score t-shirts of organizations?
Yeah. Yeah, now we have some of our own, and actually this is something we've been talking about doing too, is trying to have that as a service. But we have quite a bit of stuff that we've acquired over the years.
I'm not sure if I would do it as a service because, you know, factoring in the whole DEFCON 3-2-1 rule, you know, hackers already don't like to bathe.
we'll release more info about that later, but it's been along the lines of, you know, like disguises and things we're talking about now. So
if the OSIN is solid and we can figure out, you know, hey, there's some construction going on here or something like that, where we can pack accordingly. Cause something we don't do, and I know some other people do this, they bring like a giant suitcase full of guises. I try to only bring like maybe two or three, I think might work. And oftentimes we don't even need them. So,
yeah, I will say that my prized disguise was I found a waste management polo shirt at a thrift store.
That's a good one.
That's one of the more powerful ones to use because I coupled it with the forensics guy where I worked drove a white pickup truck. He had that and an old, it was like a 70 something model Z28. So if I was going to be doing some of that kind of stuff, I'd be like, hey, can you drive the pickup truck tomorrow? I might need to borrow it. And I even went and had a waste management magnet with the local phone number made so I could slap it on the side of the truck and just drive the truck over, tell them, hey, you know, feed them a story, grease up the skid so that I can pull a phone out and be taking pictures and video and everything else without setting off any alarms. It was great. But, you know, obviously that's a regional thing. So some places you might have a different company, but that leads to exactly what you said, depending on the quality of the OSINT.
Yeah. Yep. And then, you know, also like, be careful what you're dressing as too, you know, don't get a police officer uniform. Even like mail couriers, you got to be careful with that because the federal employees, you know, and so just be mindful when you do choose your disguises, and don't buy them and use them straight out of the box. Getting like high vis vests and stuff that are, have no
wrinkles.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you can still see the creases where it was folded from Amazon or whatever. Dirty that stuff up. You know, borax. Pro tip: borax will help soften up that fabric and dull it a little bit. I use that in my stunt show for a lot of outfits. So
transmission like oil. Transmission oil is actually a really good thing to dirty up something too. And it's hard to get out. You don't really want it to get out. But if you're disguised too, let's say electric company, electrician, whatever it is, and that's your guys, make sure you can actually speak, you know, like talk shop, shop talk, whatever.
Talk shop.
Know the vernacular.
Yeah, make sure you actually know what you're talking about. Otherwise, you're going to look like a complete idiot and you're going to burn yourself. So, yeah.
Don't go in asking where the flux capacitor is.
Yeah.
What's this red wire?
BLT drive. On AWOL. Yeah.
So what you're saying is with your disguises, you should treat them like cast iron and season them well before use.
Absolutely. Get some stickers, you know, like Makita stickers and stuff like that. Put it on, you know, a toolbox or a bag or, you know, don't ham it up like a DEFCON bag, but, you know, like,
right. Like Milwaukee, all the big tool companies.
Yep. You
know, something to that effect. Put some flair on it, but don't go full on Ric Flair.
Exactly.
Yard sales are great to find things. They're aged. They've clearly been, you know, loved a lot. So the work's already done for you there. So
yeah, we did an assessment once where Brent was part of building management because the target was renting the building, and I was an electrician. And we went in, either do the electrician or fire suppression system inspector. And he's, you know, escorting me, and I'm installing wireless access points and other things like that while, you know, he's, because everybody sees a guy in a fancy outfit, you know, leading another dude who's there with a high-vis vest and a helmet and a clipboard, like you said. That's worked for us a few times in the past.
And it's good to have a radio in your hand, like on you too, whether you're the contractor or the management, whatever. Because then it looks like, you know, you've got people you're talking to. So yeah, lots of options.
That's one I hadn't thought of. That's a good one. Especially like around here, I have a lot of ideas for stereotypes on how to dress if you're the building manager, but I'm just going to hold those back just because they're kind of funny, but that's about it. Looks like we're getting kind of close to time, and to be respectful of your time, I guess we'll go around. Any parting wisdom, and how/if you want to be contacted, can people contact you?
My parting wisdom is be bold. You know, don't let it make you too afraid, because we're able to do things as professionals that we probably normally would never have the guts to do. And when you're testing security, and you know, push yourself a little bit, be creative, try to think outside the box. And you know, as far as certifications go, you know, definitely take the training, but you know, and I know I was bashing on them a little bit, but you know, there's some good training out there. There's a lot of information out there, a lot of companies. You can follow us on Instagram at Covert Entry. You can also go to wehackpeople.com. Yeah, but I know myself and Brent both are open for questions, and there's a submission form on there if you have to. So
my parting wisdom would be, make sure you prepare, whether it is disguises like we were talking about, not just what you're wearing, but what you're going to say and how you're going to carry yourself. You can have a box full of brand new bypass tools, Hack 5 implants, whatever it is. Prepare. If you buy new lock picks and you show up on site and you aren't used, you don't know what you're doing, why even have them? If you have bypass tools that you've never really practiced with, why have them? If you have Hack 5 tools and you have it set up your C2 server or tested it against AVs, the point being, you can have all these fancy tools and things, but if you aren't prepared, then it's not going to work out. Also, drink your Ovaltine.
Stay hydrated.
Yep. And always carry some Motrin and a fresh pair of socks if you were military, just because that's the solution to everything.
But that and some Imodium.
I was on subs, so we never really had to worry about the Imodium side. It was usually the opposite end of that spectrum. Until we got to a point where we ran out of the real moo, and when we had to go to the powdered moo, the powdered milk, then that problem kind of went away. But yeah, nevertheless, either way, it's been fun. It's definitely been very eye-opening. I hope the viewers live and on replay get value from it. If you have any questions, reach out to Brent or Tim or myself as appropriate, and we'll talk to you soon. You can take a look at all of the links for the Ascension at Linktree. So that's linktr.ee/theAscension. And that's all we've got for now. With that being said, we'll see you next time. If you are interested in on-demand training, check out the Ascension Academy. We currently have 3 courses available. You can bundle all 3 of those courses or 2 of those courses. We have replays of webinars as well as a lot of free content. Visit academy.theascension.com. If you're interested in purchasing courses from the Ascension, you can do so in a variety of ways. The easiest way is the Ascension store, which is at theascension.com/courses/store. You can purchase bundles, individual courses, and placeholders here. If you would like a custom bundle, please email bundles@theascension.com for custom bundles or questions. If you'd like to bundle these courses, we offer this in a payment plan and as a one-time payment. There are the links to take care of that. You can follow us on Twitch. Ocent.mobi/Twitch is the redirect. Ocent.mobi/YouTube is the YouTube redirect. And also, we maintain a couple of communities. On Discord, we maintain the Ascension Discord, which is ocent.mobi/Discord. And we are also members of Ocent Intelligence on LinkedIn, which you can join via ocent.mobi/ocentintelligence. There are the links to my social media as well as the Ascensions. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like this video, comment, share, subscribe, and hit that notification bell.